Hi friends, it's Brittany. Before we dive into today's episode, I have a quick ask for you. I need your help. I'm doing a short listener survey to get to know you a little bit better. Who's tuning in? What do you love? And how I can keep Conscious Pathways fresh, meaningful, and aligned with what you need. It won't take more than 5 minutes, and your feedback means so much to me. It helps me grow and helps this podcast to grow with you. You'll find the link in the show notes, and I would be so grateful if you took a moment to share your thoughts. Thanks for being here. Thanks for listening. And now let's get into the episode.
Online world is your oyster. You know, start typing things in about that thing that brings you curiosity and let it take you down that rabbit hole of information.
Welcome to Conscious Pathways, the podcast where we explore the intersection of education and social justice through transformative conversations. I'm your host, Brittany, and I'm so happy that you're joining me today. I want to send a special shout out and thank you to my Patreon supporters. If you want to join Patreon for just $5 a month, you can get access to my monthly newsletter where I'll go over resources and a deeper dive into conversations and topics from this month's episodes. I'll also be sharing resources as well through there. You have access to Ask an Expert, so you can ask me or one of my expert guests a question that I can answer live on the podcast, and also early access to the podcast, so no ads, ad-free, early access, so lots of really great fun things are happening there. You'll get some really special behind the scenes, and I can really just be a little bit more of myself on Patreon, so if you want more ways to interact with me and a beautiful, vibrant community, you can join my Patreon. It is linked down below. And just again, special shout out and thank you to those subscribers. I appreciate you. Today I am joined by a magnificent lady, Myra Gomez Sanchez. Myra is a launch and sales conversion copywriter and marketing strategist who connects the public to diversity-driven leaders by writing culturally relevant and genuine copy. She believes that authentic marketing to today's diverse public can help bridge the cultural divide we see today, making the realm of marketing a place where all business owners can come together and create a safe space for inclusivity for everyone. As a former educator, Myra was really great to talk to. We talked a lot about her transition into education as an elementary school teacher, her transition outside of education, and, you know, what skills that she brought over from her, you know, time being an educator and being in the classroom, and how those skills transformed into her starting her own copy business and really going into, you know, how can we make ethical copy and how can we really make copy that is authentic and true to the diverse audiences and diverse learners. And so, you know, we know that there's been kind of a bit of an exodus of education. Educators are leaving the field. Either they're retiring or, you know, they're leaving the field, or we're not getting as many incoming educators. And that's been kind of a big realm of conversation. So, you know, finding ways that we can retain our education workforce is something that's been kind of top of mind for a lot of leaders in education. And, you know, as we think about how can we retain educators and how can we shift, you know, the mentality in education, you know, we know that it's been a field that's really high in burnout. We know that, you know, educators just kind of go through the ringer through a lot of these different, you know, things and ways that we approach education. And so that is something that, you know, we talk about in this episode as well. But, you know, sometimes the best form of self-care is just walking away from something that's just not working. So if you or someone you know are in a position, whether you're a teacher, you're in the classroom, you're feeling burned out, and you're kind of feeling outside of your value system, this is a really good episode to listen to. So feel free to share it with anyone that might be helpful for them. And you know what? Let's just jump into that episode. Hello and welcome to Conscious Pathways. I am joined by the fantastic Myra Gomez Sanchez. Welcome to Conscious Pathways.
Hi, Brittany. Thank you so much for having me today.
Yes, of course. Of course. I know we just met, I think it was like last week, and we had such a beautiful conversation.
So I feel it came out so naturally.
It did. I feel like I've known you for like years, but we just met each other.
I know. And that's like the perfect way to like segment into like a new relationship is like just
feeling someone's vibe immediately and being like, okay, I vibe with this person.
Yes. Yes. I think we both passed the vibe check. So look at us go.
Yes. The vibes are here.
Are you local to California?
I am. So I am originally from a small town called Wasco in the Central Valley, like near Bakersfield.
Yes.
I moved to San Diego. I think it's going to be like 8 years now that I've been here in San Diego. So yeah, it's, been crazy going from a very small rural agricultural town to a city.
Yeah. And even like compared to other cities we have here in Southern California, like, LA, San Diego, it's a big county and a big city, but it still feels really small. So you can go to your little neighborhoods and it just feels like, oh, a little small San Diego town.
That's what I love about it. Yeah. Like whatever vibe you're feeling, you go to that neighborhood. And you're right, it doesn't feel so big, which I think is a nice middle ground for myself, because I still want like that somewhat of a slow paced life, but with a balance.
Yes, a little bit of a balance. Yeah, I feel like I was in San Diego for a while, then I moved to LA for a while, and I ended up liking LA more than I thought that I would. I thought it was going to be too much, and it was a lot. But I ended up liking it a lot more than I originally thought that I would. I don't want to live there again, but I did like it.
To each their own, right? People vibe with different types of environments, and if it works for you, great. And if it doesn't, like, luckily you have the capacity to move where you feel comfortable.
Exactly. I feel like that's the beauty of, Southern California. There's a space for everyone to kind of exist. You want big city? We got that. You want beach town? We got you.
That's right.
You want to live in the desert? Right. We got you.
Exactly. Your choice.
It is your choice. Live your life, homies. So tell me a little bit about your journey into education. Who or what inspired you to want to be an educator?
I grew up really not knowing what I wanted to do at all. Like I just, went to school, and then once it got to be time to go to college, I was like, I don't really know where I want to go to college. And I remember I just got like a brochure from the UCs, and I saw a beach, and I'm like, that looks nice. And it was UC Santa Barbara. So I'm like, I'm going to go there because there's a beach.
Makes sense.
And so I went there to school, and I just started taking classes that caught my attention. And I noticed that the pattern of those classes were based around education and sociology. And now looking back, almost, 12 years ago, I started seeing that, no wonder I liked those classes, because the theme was always based on like human relationships, how people interact with each other and how that can make a positive or negative difference in someone's life. And that's what I'm like, oh, that's it. That's it right there. The human relationships is what caught my attention. So I took lots of those courses to the point where I had enough to major in sociology and minor in education. And with that minor in education, I had to volunteer a certain amount of hours at the local elementary schools in the Santa Barbara area as a teacher's assistant. And I really liked that. So once I graduated with my bachelor's, I decided to go straight into a one-year combined credential teaching credential program and a master's in education at UCSB. So I did their Gravettes Graduate School of Education. And then in that 1 year, I was we had placements where I was placed half the year in a lower elementary and then the other half in a higher elementary. So for half the year, I was in a sixth grade classroom. And then the second half of the year, I was in a kindergarten classroom.
Wow.
So it was nice to see two ends of the spectrum. My first year teaching was in a town near my hometown, and I taught first grade, and I really loved it because, the kids were so excited, so curious, so sweet. And because I loved it so much, when I went on to teach my second year, I actually did move to San Diego. And I was hoping that I could continue with the lower grades again, not knowing, right, because it's not my choice. But luckily I felt like luck was on my side, and I taught kindergarten. And then from there, I was just kind of between those grades. Like the following year was first grade for like a few years, and then a few years passed, and then it was second grade. And that was really it. So it was between K through second. And I just really enjoyed, like I said, the kids were always just curious, excited about school. Mm-hmm. And I loved creating lessons that were based off their interests. So every year, you know, there's a new group of kids, new group of interests. The years are passing, so there's new trends that they like.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, well, if they like this, let me see if I can make a lesson out of that so I can keep them engaged. Nice. And so I was feeling like I was always on the creative mode. Like, how can I make this engaging for them? How can I make this fun for them so they want to come to school? So, yeah, that led up to me teaching for a few years. And now I am a copywriter. So I did transition out of teaching, but I still consider myself an educator because I'm still like teaching my clients now about marketing, but more in the sense of like how to be ethical about it. And, you know, my heart is still in education. So I make sure that I always have clients that are in the education realm.
Mm-hmm. Yes. That's like a beautiful transition into that. Cause do you want to tell us a little bit more about like what copywriting is and like, why is it important?
Yeah. So when I was getting towards a certain point in my teaching career, I was starting to feel a little bit burnt out and I was starting to see what other avenues I could take with all the skills that I've gained. So I just went on Google and I was like, what jobs do teachers do after teaching? Something like that. And what popped up was copywriting. And back then I didn't know what that was. So I'm like, what's copywriting? And I just started going through a rabbit hole of research of information. And it pretty much just like went down the lines of like, it's the words that people read on their screen, whether it's like on their website, on someone's website, a page that's where you're going to buy something, emails that you open from a business. That's the words that are, and they're persuading you to take a certain action. So when I first read that, I was like, okay, well, that sounds kind of sleazy. Like, I don't want to do that. But then as I kept going through my research, I started coming across really ethical copywriters who were more about marketing, but marketing ethically to where the people who are reading the words are feeling empowered. They're excited to buy the service or to buy the product. And I'm like, okay, I definitely could stand by that is, you know, writing ethically. And then on top of that, I'm like, well, I'm still really focused on helping others, whether it be in the education space or even if they're not educators, but they're in like the products, they sell products or they sell other services, as long as whatever that is, it's to benefit someone, you know, mentally, spiritually, emotionally, physically. Basically, the person who is receiving that product or service is feeling good. And it's sustainable, it's ethical, then I would stand by it.
Yeah.
So I started, you know, searching for those type of clients. And thankfully, that's been my clientele, been surrounded with product-based business owners, service-based business owners. And it's all been in that realm of like them wanting to bring good into the world.
Yes. And what I love about, you know, your entire journey and your story is that that connection between like when you were looking at those classes and looking at the themes and the classes that you're wanting to take and going into education and sociology is that, you know, you're connecting to that. I want to be with people and I want to, you know, build relationships and I want to, you know, focus on those relationships and at the core of it, it's people. Right. And so I think that's a lot of reasons why people go into education, you know, with that mindset of like, I want to help people. I want to help students. I want to help kids. Right. It's really that relationship component is what a lot of us when we're going into education is what we're doing. And I love that you're still utilizing that passion for people and, you know, a similar way, if not, you know, within the educational system, but you're still utilizing that and wanting to do that in ethical and in important ways. Like you're still staying true to like who you are as a person. You're not losing that aspect. It's actually enhancing your business and your practices. And I think that's a really beautiful aspect of what you're bringing to the table, which is great.
Well, thank you so much, Brittany. And I definitely resonate with that. And that's what I wanted. It's like, I'm not going to lie, it ate me up for the last couple months of me wondering if I should switch careers. Like, I felt guilt. I felt like a failure. I cried a lot. Yeah. And then I finally got to the point where I'm like, you know, I know I'm not bringing my best self to the table anymore. I was going through a lot mentally and emotionally. And I'm like, this isn't serving me. And it's not serving my kids because they feed off my behavior. And it's not fair to them, you know, especially because they're so young at the age group I had. Like, they deserve a teacher who is going to be very excited and motivated. And as much as I tried towards the end, I just felt like it wasn't, I was faking it, and I'm like, I don't want them to see that. Like, it's like I said, I felt like it wasn't fair to them, and I think for so long I was like trying to be selfless, that I'm like, it's okay if I want to be selfish for a little bit, especially if it's going to help me, you know, better my mental health. So when I finally took that step back, it was like a mixture of emotions. Like, I felt relief, but I also felt sadness. I felt happy, but also felt nostalgia. It was like these back and forth emotions. But, you know, it's going back to what you said, when I finally did make the leap, I was like, well, I'm doing this now, but I'm going to bring everything that I learned with teaching into my copywriting career, and especially that those foundational values of like meaningful work, helping others, and just bringing good into the world, because we need it.
Yes. We need all of that we can take. And I remember when I felt the same things, when I was, you know, leaving the classroom, you know, I felt like, oh, I'm failing at this, or, you know, I couldn't do it. Or like, you know, I spent all this time studying and going to school to do this specific thing. Like, there's nothing else I can do because this is the one thing that I studied and know how to do. And, you know, I was also looking at different career paths and, you know, looking at, okay, where can I basically make money essentially? And a lot of things were coming up as like sales. And I was like, it's kind of the same thing. Like, this kind of feels sleazy. Like, I don't think I can sell something if I don't personally feel passionate about it, if I don't feel connected to it, if I don't feel like it's, you know, for the public good, if it's helping people. I can't just like sell stuff just to sell it. You know, some people can do that, and more power to you, but I can't do it.
No, I'm right there with you. I'm like, I had to learn like sales in an ethical manner because I don't want to feel gross.
Like, I don't want to feel icky at the end of the day. And so it's just, it's like finding your space in that realm. And so I'm happy that you have found yourself and like how you could still like have that connection to being an educator and kind of how that's supporting what you're doing, you know, outside of the classroom. And, you know, like I said, I've been there, you know, I just got really burnt out, and it wasn't just the classroom, right? It was, you know, life things was happening. And then on top of that, you know, being in the classroom, it's not easy every day. There's, you know, there's struggles, and there's, you know, it's never usually the kids. Usually it's, you know, trying to figure out like, okay, we're having challenging behaviors. How can I help this? How can I help? How can I support? So it's never the child themselves. It's either like the system that you're working in, the school system, or the actual school itself, or sometimes it's, you know, parents or just things like that. And so the amalgamation of everything that gets to you, and it just, you know, it's a field that has a really high level of burnout. And like you mentioned before, when you're burned out, it's really hard to bring your whole and authentic self to the table. So I'm a big advocate for, you know, taking a break when you need it, and knowing that very likely education is not going anywhere. So, you know, if you ever decide you want to go back, it's still probably going to be there in some capacity. So you can always go back into the classroom. And I feel like the times that I've stepped back into the classroom after kind of going off doing something else, go working in nonprofits, go doing just anything else for a little bit, and the times that I stepped back in the classroom, I have, you know, come back with so much knowledge. I've come back refreshed. I've come back more patient. And I've just come back as my whole self, and I've enjoyed the act of education more when I took that break. Because, you know, like you said, you can't show up as your whole self, and you can't really give your students what they need if you're,
you know, the whole adage, you can't pour from an empty cup. And it's like, well, that's, it's,
you got to do what's good for you at the end of the day, because, you're the one at the front of the classroom. So, you know, do what is going to be good for you. And, you know, there's so many amazing like educators out there, and it's, you know, for me, even though I'm now on the outside looking in, I am just have like the most deep respect for teachers and anyone in the education space. Like I know that when my time comes to have children, I am going to be at that teacher's right hand side. Like, what do you need from me? I will help you. I'll be in your classroom. Like, you just, you tell me.
I feel that. So when you were deciding, you know, to make that career, shift into to copywriting, what did that look like for you? What did that journey look like?
So I started, the idea started coming up around 2021, like a year after the main shutdown with the pandemic. And it was just an idea. And that's when I did start like going on Google and typing in those like phrases, like, what else can I do? And then that year really just consisted of researching copy, like what copy was, and programs that I could potentially take. And of course, you know, with the algorithm, the, you know, your phone and your laptop knows what you're looking at. So then I started getting ads about copywriting. And then finally by the following year, the beginning of 2022, I kind of already knew like, okay, this is what I, the path I want to take now that I did a lot of research. Plus, on top of that, by the beginning of 2022, I was, my mental health was really starting to go down. Like it was already like kind of like starting, you know, in 2021, but 2022, I was already like to the point where like, I was starting to feel like foggy minded. Like I felt like I wasn't fully there. I'm like, this isn't good. So I felt like I really needed to take some type of action. And finally I decided on a program where I just felt it was really ethical, and I would learn copy, but I would learn it in a way where it wouldn't be slimy, wouldn't be gross. It would be like connected to the person behind the brand. So I took the dive into paying for a course, which I've never done in my life. Like I was so into the old school mode of like, you got to go to a school and take classes, you know, and get your degree. So this world of like online businesses, I was like, well, I don't know you, like, are you trustworthy? Are you just going to take my money and run? But no, I, being the skeptic that I am, I definitely like researched the person and like, okay, this is a legit business. And it was a hefty price. So I was like, oh my gosh, like, I'm going to be in debt. But then, you know, luckily after a, definitely a very in-depth conversation with my husband, he knew how much I was struggling, and he's like, I think this is going to be good for you. And I know you're like a very driven person. Like, I know you're going to make the most of it. Like it'll be worth it. So we took the leap and I paid for the course, and I just dove in and took all the notes that I could, being like the lifelong learner that I am. And, you know, ask questions on it. I would attend all the calls that I could or watch replays, you know, if I wasn't able to. Because, again, during this time period, I was also teaching. So I didn't fully just, like, go straight into it. I was teaching, and then I would come home and learn about copy. And that was tiring, you know, because you're already tired from the day, being in the classroom and then learning more. But in those hard times, I was able to, you know, obviously keep – the money flowing, right? Got to pay the bills. And then after some time of learning, I was able to get some clients while still teaching. And then once I got that practice in with like going through the whole process of what it takes to onboard a client and, you know, going through proposals and contracts, writing the copy, delivering it to them. And I got comfortable. Then I'm like, okay, I think I'm ready now. I'm ready to fully go into this. So I went fully in as of last October, so October 2023. Yeah, that's correct. 23. And that was, again, that's where that point where I was like, I was relieved, but then I was sad, but then I was happy, mm-hmm. but then I was nostalgic. Like, also, you know, what did I do? Like, was this the right choice? But I just followed my gut and I ripped it off like a bandaid. Obviously, you know, ending it well where I let my school know in advance and mm-hmm. helping them with the transition. But yeah, once it was all said and done, I'm like, it felt weird that first week where I'm like, oh, I'm not going to a classroom. Yeah. You know, I'm not going to create a lesson plan. So it was definitely a time of transition, still having clients, but mentally like transitioning. Mm-hmm. And now, because, you know, a few months have passed of me doing this full time, I no longer feel that I feel really at peace. I feel happy. And I'm just thankful that I went on that journey. And obviously, mm-hmm. I'm still going on it. Like, not going to lie, that some day, they're not all perfect days. Some days I still cry and wonder. But overall, I do feel like this just sense of peace that came over me.
Mm. Yes. And I remember feeling that way, too, when I had kind of made a shift and, you know, started, you know, managing a nonprofit. And it was weird not going into the classroom and not having my own classroom. And like, it was a lot of weirdness around it, but at the same time, it did feel like pretty relieving. And then I realized I was still using all of the strategies that I was using, you know, with my students in the classroom, just using that with adults. And I'm like, oh, okay. You know, you work with young children often enough and you just learn that really at the end of the day, all they want to know is that they are seen, they are heard, you know, that their input mm-hmm. is valued. And it's the same thing with working with other people, you know, make sure that they feel seen, that they're heard, their input is valued, and, you know, that'll take you a really long way. And so just my pathway into management was really guided by, okay, if I can do this with, you know, 2-year-old, I can do this with anybody.
Yeah. That's like the biggest takeaway I feel like I could take from teaching is like the act of listening. We as educators had to practice so much active listening mm-hmm. That it became second nature. And that was like the first biggest thing I felt a lot of confidence in mm-hmm. when I transitioned. It's like, I know how to actively listen. You know, I did this for a living for, you know, X amount of years. Mm-hmm. And that has come just so naturally, communicating, right? Learning how to take complex information and, you know, changing it up to make mm-hmm. it relatable and understandable for whoever you're trying to target. So I'm like, well, that's teaching right there. Like,
that's teaching.
You take a complex lesson and you're going to teach it to second graders. Yeah. How can I change up this language for them to understand? Well, same with copy. It's like, mm-hmm. here's this big task on this topic. How can I change it up to for that audience to be excited about it, to mm-hmm. really digest the information in a way that it doesn't overwhelm them. So I'm like, yeah, there's so many things that I could take from teaching into this that I'm like, I got this.
Yep. Yep. It's such like a fun, empowering moment when you're doing it. You're like, oh, what am I so nervous about? Like I've been doing this for years.
Yes.
It's the same thing, just a different way. mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what kind of advice would you have for educators who are kind of contemplating making that career shift, but like aren't really sure what to do or how to do that?
Yeah, I would definitely start thinking about like what brings you curiosity and with whatever that curiosity is, you know, the online world is your oyster, you know, start typing things in about that thing that brings you curiosity and let it take you down that rabbit hole of information. And then once you kind of know like, okay, yeah, this is kind of what I'm looking for, I would say then start networking with people in that niche, like on LinkedIn or Instagram, start following them, ask questions, ask a lot of questions. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's what's helped me. It's like, okay, well, I know I like this. Now let me find other copywriters.
Yeah.
Let me see what they're talking about. Oh, I didn't really understand that part. Let me ask them. Mm-hmm. And that just leads to like, oh, a conversation, like you and I had a conversation, you know, mm-hmm. then maybe that person has resources for you and, you know, they can vouch for it. It's like a person is vouching for it. And that makes it more like, okay, I want to try it too. So I would definitely start with that path is like, see what you're curious about, research it, and then start networking with people in that niche of what you're curious about.
Yes. I think that networking component is commonly like it's misunderstood or we forget about it, but networking is so important. Just reaching out to people, whether that's, you know, on places like LinkedIn or just attending, you know, events. And I know it can be kind of scary just like talking to random people. I know I definitely got really nervous about it at first. Like, what am I supposed to say? I'm just going to reach out to people. But generally speaking, people like to talk about themselves and what they do. And so if you're reaching out, just asking questions about themselves and what they do, they're very likely to respond positively to that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. The more you do it, the more comfortable you get with it. And, you know, sometimes people won't respond and like, that's okay. People have busy lives. You know, it's not the end of the world. And, but that networking component is so, so integral and so important, just really connecting with people and seeing what's out there in the world. And, you know, there people are very likely to just respond and just answer a few questions, you know, make it easy for them. But it's so important. I feel like a lot of the career advances I've made in my life, especially the last couple of years since I've been back in San Diego, have been because I've just put myself in spaces where there's other people who are doing similar things, you know, and they're like, oh, I know so-and-so does, you know, this thing that you're asking about, like, I'll put you in touch with them. And that's opened so many pathways and so many doorways to things that I couldn't even ever imagined. Had I not just been reaching out to people and just asking questions and just connecting and like really just focusing on making those connections. I listened to this one podcast and it was Balanced Black Girl, amazing podcast, just shamelessly plugging her in there. But she was talking about how she does networking and she's an introvert like me and just would prefer to just be at home. And I'm like, I get that. How do you do this? And one piece of advice that she had was just, if you go to a networking event or you're going out or you're going to a conference or something, is that have in mind that you want to make a meaningful connection with like just one person, just one meaningful connection with one person. And that I did that at a conference I went to recently and I made a lot more meaningful connections, but it was so much less stressful when I put in my mind, like the only thing you have to do is make one meaningful connection with one person. That's it. And it took all the stress. It's so less, much less overwhelming because you walk into the space, you're like, there's so many people. How am I going to like, how am I going to make myself, you know, unique? How am I going to like meet people? How am I going to enter into a conversation? It's like, nah, I only just need to connect with one person. That's it.
Yes. And yeah, I agree. Like, don't give yourself information overwhelm.
Yeah.
You know, just exactly following that advice. I agree. I'm also an introvert. I think that's also partly why I chose copywriting, because it's like, oh, I don't have, I mean, I interact with clients, but it's, I can also be behind my screen and take time to be in a quiet place for a little bit and then come back out and then come back in. So I agree. It takes practice. You just got to rip it off like a Band-Aid, put yourself out there. When I started, I barely started networking in person like 2 months ago. And that first time I was like, oh my gosh, this isn't usually what I do. But you're right. Once I was there and I just like, went to one person and then they're like, oh, I met this person, come join me. And it's like became this ripple effect and it was a really positive experience. So I definitely agree with that piece of advice.
Yes. Yeah. That was a game changer for me in terms of just networking. And cause I would go to events and then I would get too scared to like say or do anything cause I was just overwhelmed. And then I just would like leave and I'm like, I mean, I gained a lot of information, but I don't think I networked. And so just having that in my mind, like just connect with one person, that's all you got to do. And now my networking game, I feel like is pretty strong. I should talk to people now. but also just knowing how to take care for yourself as an introvert. And I know that I don't try to stack too many things on days I know I'm going to be out at a conference or out networking. Cause that's not going to set me up for success.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
You got to know yourself.
Know yourself. You know, if you're an extrovert, you know, go out there and extrovert. You're fine. This part of this conversation is not for you.
I was like, is there such thing as like an introverted extrovert or extroverted introvert?
Yeah. There's like an ambivert that's like a little bit of both. And I think, you know, this book that I was reading is kind of like off topic, but this book that I was reading about like highly sensitive people, the way that she kind of described it is like, you know, it's like a scale for introverts, right? So there's sometimes when you're just, you know, being really social and like, you know, it's just like our battery just runs out a lot faster than extroverts. So it's not like I don't like interacting with people. It's just I have just a small battery for it. And then once it's out, I'm like, okay, I want to go to bed now. I'm tired. I'm ready to go. No,
I feel like that's me. Like I am an introvert at my core, but I can turn it on when I need to, kind of like, you know, as a teacher, that's how I practice it, you know, like, especially with the littles, you're out there and you're enthusiastic and your face and your eyes, but then I come home like, okay, I need to be me.
Yeah. Cause when you're in the classroom, you're on pretty much the entire time.
Yeah,
it's just you got to be on, and then once you get home, you're like, okay, I'm gonna turn it off, and I don't want to be on until tomorrow.
yes, exactly.
Good balance. So I know with your current clients that you seek out, you mentioned that they're in and around the realm of education. So can you tell me a little bit about how, in your role as a copywriter and as a small business owner, how you kind of continue to advocate for education and social justice?
Yeah, so when I partner with clients, especially those that are of the education realm, I want to make sure that I'm using my communication skills with them to make sure that I'm able to really understand their mission so that I don't, you know, misconstrue it when I'm writing things for their socials or things for their website. I also want to make sure that when I partner with them, that they are really trying to solve like problems at the root, so that those who are listening or reading whatever way they're marketing themselves are taking it in to see like, okay, I see the problem. How can I solve it? Because I see how they're solving it in whatever realm they're in. Now, how can I use those tools for me to do it on my end? So it's really writing in a way that helps build like inspiration and resilience for, especially like, again, right now I'm talking more in the education space with the clients that I work with in the education realm.
I think that's so beautiful. I know that you tend to work with, like I said, small businesses and BIPOC businesses. And so I think that's incredibly important, especially in that small business realm, seeing how, you know, a lot of small businesses are comprised of, you know, women of color, but also women of color tend to get less of the funding. So, you know, kind of seeing how, you know, these businesses tend to be, they have more hurdles and more barriers and to get to that level of success. And so knowing that there's, you know, someone out there who's, you know, kind of in their corner and kind of really takes that time to understand like, what are your missions and what is your goals? And, you know, I think that really lends itself into that social justice component of really elevating, you know, businesses and elevating, you know, these voices and the products or services that they have to offer and like kind of bringing that to that main stage. I think that's really important.
Yeah, no, thank you for saying that, because that is definitely a big reason why I niched into like diversity driven brands and leaders, because they are aware that they want to be more inclusive in their marketing, so that the audience that they're attracting actually resonates with what they're saying. You know, like, oh, this, if I'm the audience member and I'm reading about a certain brand, I want to feel like, oh wow, they're really speaking to me. I want to see more about what they have to say or sell versus the brand posts something and then the reader reads it and say, oh, that's kind of cringy because I can see that they're trying to get to me, but it is definitely not authentic and I can feel it. So that's why I'm like, well, that's where I come in. You know, I'm going to be the bridge between diversity driven leaders and business owners and the diverse community, which right now, you know, from the latest census, the BIPOC community makes up 42% of the population in the US. So that's a lot of people that you're trying to authentically market to. So whether you're a BIPOC business owner or you're not, but you want to be inclusive of your marketing, you know, it's so important to have a copywriter who's like socially aware and able to, you know, make those words connect authentically with everybody.
Yes. And I love that you mentioned that authentic kind of connection, right? Especially if you're not from that community, you know, and you want to be inclusive to another community, it can be difficult to know, like, am I saying the right thing? Like, you know, I don't want to get in trouble for saying the wrong thing. And it's just, there's a lot of nerve-wracking things that kind of come with that. But you still want it to be inclusive and authentic. And, you know, you want people to see messages that they can connect with and, like, know that this is a safe space for them to want to be a part of. And when I think of, like, the brands and the businesses that I mostly either want to work with, or the bands and businesses that I want to give my money to, right? Just being really socially conscious about that. You know, they're the ones who are doing that are trying to be, you know, inclusive and are actually not just saying it, but you can see it with their practices, like their business practices, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. It always kind of grinds my gears when I see, you know, I go on a website and it's a beautifully done website and they're, you know, the word diversity is on there like 42 times. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're just talking about, oh yeah, justice and diversity. But then I go and I look at your board and your board's not diverse. And I look at your team and mm-hmm. your team's not diverse. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, okay, so you're talking the talk, but you're not walking the walk, and that's yeah. not authentic. And I, you know, we see right through that in yeah. a lot of sense. So it's, yeah, you just kind of make sure that those are in alignment. Cause you know, I would say that the consumer today, like, we're getting a lot more savvy and we're, mm-hmm. we're getting a lot more picky about, you know, where we want to spend our time and money and energy. And, you know, the strategies that used to work aren't the ones that still work today.
Yes. So definitely I resonate wholeheartedly with all of that, mm-hmm. where it's like, we are socially conscious consumers yeah. in today's world. And we want, like you said, to give our money to people who have strong values, mm-hmm. Who want to help others. And, you know, again, being inclusive, given that we are living in such a diverse world. Mm-hmm. And it really takes, I feel like a lot of BIPOC business owners and brands know that because they are of the community. Mm-hmm. And I think the missing piece right now is getting those brands and businesses that are not BIPOC to mm-hmm. join, because I feel like there's still a divide between BIPOC business owners and businesses that aren't BIPOC.
Yeah.
Like, there's just these two different worlds. And it's like, we don't need to, like, be enemies. Like, yeah. the way that we're going to impact the community is by working together mm-hmm. and being helpful to one another. So that's why I'm like, yes, I have written, you know, for BIPOC brands, but no, like, that's not, like, the only people I write for. Like, I want to write for those yeah. that aren't BIPOC so I can help you with your messaging yeah. to be inclusive, so that the BIPOC community, who are conscious consumers, mm-hmm. you know, really genuinely want to buy what you sell. Obviously, yeah. you know, making sure that what they're selling is also something that I stand by.
Yes. Yes. I think that's important. You know, as a small business owner, it can be hard to say no when there's, like, money on the table, and it can be hard to say, like, you know, this isn't a right fit or anything. But I think there's a lot of respect in that too, of just, this isn't in alignment. And, you know, that goes into that networking piece of, like, this isn't in alignment with me and my values, but I know, you know, someone else who might be in alignment, or I know someone else who I can, you know, refer you to. And there's a lot of respect and dignity in being able to do that. But knowing that, you know, you understand where your, you know, passions and where your values are, and, you know, where the line is for you, and just saying, you know, these are the parameters in which I can work within. That's an important thing. And especially as we're thinking about career shifts, and we're thinking about, you know, what's important to us as educators, you know, really be, you know, I always tell incoming, you know, teachers to really just sit down and understand what your values are as an educator. Like, really sit mm-hmm. it down, write a list. Those values might change over time. They might shift over time. Some things that are important to you at one point in your life might not be as important at a different point in life. But really just sit down and have your values, and either put that somewhere where you can see it pretty regularly, and kind of keep going back to that. Because as you kind of go throughout your teaching journey, your values are going to be the ones that are kind of your guiding light and your guiding force. Yes. And so just being really sure and really certain of that. And when you start seeing yourself, you know, making decisions that are outside of your values, when you see yourself, you know, either doing things or saying things or thinking things that are outside of those values, that's kind of an indicator that something's off, whether that's the space is off or whether that's something that's happening. Like, there's something off that's happening, and, you know, let me reconfigure, let me, like, you know, recalibrate a little bit on, you know, what am I looking for and what do I need? But your values are going to be those things that will keep you grounded throughout your journey, and they'll tell you. You just got to listen to it.
Oh yeah. Okay, you'll feel it. It's a feeling. You will feel it. Mm-hmm. So I agree. And like, my version of writing down my values has been a vision board.
Yes.
Where I, like, you know, I pulled out magazines, I cut out words and pictures that resonated with me, put it on nothing too big, because I just wanted it, like, small enough but big enough where I can see it. And then I put it on my mirror, because that's where I end to get, I get ready in front of my mirror every day. So to this day, it's there, and it's just like a nice reminder of, like, okay, this is why I'm doing what I'm doing. Here's the motivation that I need on those days where I'm not feeling my best. And I have loved it. Like, I know I can make one every year, but the one that I made was in 2022 when I was ready to do that shift. And I still resonate with it to this day. So I'm like, it was meant to be.
It was meant to be. I love that you keep your vision. And I think vision boarding is a really, really good way to go about that. I have mine on my desktop right now, so it's just hanging out right there. But and, you know, you can do that every year, and that, you know, again, you're just rechecking in with yourself. What's important to me? What worked last year? What didn't work? But, you know, keeping those values and just knowing that in your heart and soul will help you to kind of make aligned decision and take aligned action towards, you know, whatever it is that you're wanting to do. You know, obviously we want to keep teachers in school. We want to, make sure our teachers are happy and healthy and all those things. But we also know that teaching is hard, and, you know, life gets difficult. And when you're in that space of I'm burnt out, you know, it's okay to take a step away. It's okay to take a break. It's okay to do something else. And that you're not a failure for doing that. You're just a human being who's human being, if that's a word.
You're a human being.
Yeah. So, you know, do what you have to do to take care of yourself. And just, again, know when it's time to step back and step up. That's a big thing in social justice. You know, sometimes you're in a position where you can lead, and sometimes you're in a position where you need to take a step back and let someone else lead. And there's no shame in that. That is a beautiful thing to just be aware of. So, you know, thank you for that. My last and final question for you is, how do you reimagine education?
So if I could, you know, reimagine education, I would definitely make sure with its foundation, you know, that it starts at home. And that would, in a perfect world, mean that parents would have just books of different cultures, different religions, different ways of upbringing, you know, that the parents don't need to be the traditional parents that you see on TV, just so that kids can see that, okay, I'm being raised this way, but doesn't mean everyone is being raised this way. And I feel like if they kids get that foundation with their parents, and then those type of books and lessons get weaved into when they start preschool, to then when they go into kinder, and all the grades that lead up to graduation. Obviously, these type of books and lessons would go with their cognitive ability. I feel like it would help just our world so much more, because everyone would be more socially aware, be more accepting of the different places that people come from, and just be willing to learn, to not just think my way is the only way. You know, that's how we get divides. It's like, let me listen to you, and then you listen to me. And I think that is like the biggest takeaway I would do if I had to reimagine education.
Yes. I adore that, because we're, you know, there are different ways of life. Like you said, there's different languages, religions, cultures, right? And by ignoring them, it doesn't make them go away. They're still existing, right? And so, you know, we want to have an accurate, you know, view of the world, and we want to show children that, yeah, just because you're being raised one way doesn't mean like that's the only way that people are being raised. You know, there's kids who believe in Santa Claus and there's kids who aren't taught about Santa Claus. And, you know, mm-hmm. you know, one way is not, you know, bad or wrong. It's just the way that, you know, people are being raised and just being able to, you know, respect that and just understand that it's just different, you know, and that that's okay. Like, it's okay that we're different, yeah. and it's okay that, you know, people do things a different way or they say something a different way. Because, you know, as kids grow up, you know, they can be kind of harsh sometimes to each other. And mm-hmm. sometimes it's unintentional, like they're not trying to be hurtful, but you know, mm-hmm. kids sometimes don't have a filter. So,
yeah, like know. They're unaware to a point, you know?
Yeah, and they're unaware
to a point. If we like start, you know, introducing them to books and mm-hmm. videos and lessons that are surrounded around being different, like everyone's different. Mm-hmm. I know my hope would be that it becomes ingrained in them to where it can be from the smallest of things where you do see mm-hmm. less bullying in schools to the bigger things, you know, when they become adults that and get jobs, you know, and mm-hmm. become leaders of the next generation that they are willing to collaborate with one another and, you know, make change to what any, you know, hatred we're seeing now mm-hmm. can hopefully be diminished or lessened when they become adults.
Yes, 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 yes. Snaps for that. That was beautifully said. Thank you so much. That's my hope. Yes, yes, that's the hope we want to see. We want to see more people just being accepting and open and curious. And that's the goal. We just want more curiosity.
Mm-hmm. Yes, curiosity is key.
Yes. Where can my audience find you?
Yeah, so you can find me on my website, MyraGSanchezAgency.com. You can find me on LinkedIn, Myra Gomez Sanchez, or you can also find me on Instagram under my business name, Cultural Visionaries, and the handle for that is Cultural_Visionaries_.
Perfect. And I will link all of that in our show notes. So if you're curious to connect with Myra in any way and all those aspects, you can do that. But I want to thank you so much for joining me and engaging in this beautiful conversation. It just, again, felt like I was talking to someone that I've known for years. So
I completely agree.
Yeah, so it's so great to have you on. And yeah, thank you. This was beautiful.
Thank you so much, Brittany.
Of course. Thank you for tuning into Conscious Pathways. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to also share or leave a rating and review. It really does help the podcast to grow and reach more listeners just like you. And until next time, don't forget to navigate your conscious journey with courage and kindness. And I'll see you there for more transformative conversations in education. Bye!